Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, there is so much sports on right now. It's like sports overload.
It's sports Mandarin. It's the buffet. And the thing about the buffet table is it encourages you to eat stuff you don't even want because you see it and you're in a feeding frenzy. I imagine sharks, when they chum the water, aren't asking, what kind of fish are you giving me? I think they just get into it. That's the buffet table.
Absolutely. And as long as the word shrimp is attached, whatever else is attached to the shrimp, I am going after. Shrimp torpedo, popcorn, breaded, grilled. I got to tell you, Bob, for me, COVID will officially be over, even if it's not, and probably isn't, when I can go to the Mandarin and I can stroll up to all the different dishes and I get to put the food on my plate. I don't want someone else doing it for me, judging me. I want to do it.
I love going. My father-in-law is gone now, but when he was here, when I would go with my in-laws to the Mandarin, I would love the first plate they would make because it was a gigantic tower of shrimp. But here's the thing. They didn't really like shrimp. But it was the thing that you paid for. Like, there was no way they were going to come back with rice and beans.
Yeah.
So there would be about 30 to 40 shrimp just piled like Jenga-like towards the sky. And they would eat it like remorseless shrimp-eating machines and get their money's worth.
Do you think they enjoyed that experience? Or was it more, instead of enjoyment, was it more satisfaction?
No, they loved it because they were not... They loved it because it was a good deal.
Right.
And that's it. It's pretty simple. I never actually found out if there was any food there that they did like. But I don't think it was about that.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law and his friends once closed an all-you-can-eat place. They threw them out.
Really?
Yeah. These were big guys. My brother-in-law at like 300 was the small one. You know, those groups of guys, they always look like, you know, well, some of them were bikers. But they just looked like a wrestling locker room when they got together. And they went into a place and, you know, after about 90 minutes, they just threw them out. I think they were ready to take the lawsuit versus the hit.
So they looked like several of them played college ball at Wisconsin and will tell you tales about the Iowa game.
They looked like Hawk and Dove's tougher cousins.
Right. Good pull.
You know, I don't really have anything to get into except for sports. There's so much sports on right now. I kind of want to start with the Jays, and I want to see if you have a take, because the Jays are super hot right now. That weekend was, speaking of the Mandarin, it was like gorging yourself. That was the 40 shrimp plate of runs. How do you talk about it, Matt?
It's all about shifting of expectations. At the end of August, it was under 8% chance of making the playoffs. And the conversation was, wow, what a disappointing year. You nailed it with Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray, and you're going to waste getting these guys on these crazy deals. And then it slowly shifted. I said, if they sweep Oakland, then there's a slight chance they'll make the playoffs. Then what they did against New York, and then Baltimore, and then Alek Manoah giving up one hit over eight innings against the team that scores the most runs, the Tampa Rays. And now the conversation has shifted to, can they make the playoffs, to what kind of damage can they do in the playoffs? And that's sort of where the conversation has gone.
I don't understand how to talk about it, because there are no themes, I realized, attached to the Jays. A few years back, people were really mad at Shapiro and Atkins because the team, you know, just post Alex Anthopoulos, there was the feeling of the rebuild, and then maybe they stuck around a year too long, and, you know, there were all kinds of themes. But over the last couple of years, it's been like cicadas buried in the ground, waiting to come out to be born. And now this team is blossoming, and I feel like we don't even know how to talk about it because we're not mad. Does that make sense?
Oh, of course. Anger, mad.
Russ does not get the grief that the other GMs get. You know, that front office doesn't get the grief that the other front offices get. And I wonder if that's a sign that people have lost interest or just don't even know how to talk about this team.
Well, to your point, anger and disappointment is always easier to talk about in terms of content because it's a sharper conversation. What's going on here is just joy and marveling and awe, but often it's not as compelling. And then, you know, you go through it and now the conversation is, how good can Manoah be? Is he now the number two starter on this team? And will Vlad win a triple crown and not the MVP? And it's really just marveling at everything coming together and what a crazy last two weeks have been for this team. Why it's hard to talk about is we're getting the bends where our expectations just overnight completely changed.
I have a different thought.
Yeah.
I think it's because these players have been growing up outside of our view. Whether it was in Florida last year because of COVID or the first part of this year in Buffalo and you know, part of last year in Buffalo, but just never here in Toronto. They haven't been part of the city. Now, that's not been the case since about July, whatever. But there hasn't been really a chance to bond with this team. We usually, when you follow a team going from the basement to the penthouse, you fall in love with them along the way. They share your narrative. But there's been no sharing of that. Like, I was so excited about Vlade Guerrero coming up. And then, you know, there were the growing pains. But really, he's been doing so much of his growing outside of my view. And now he's here, and he's incredible. But to me, like, as a sports fan, this is an example of what we all missed as Torontonians because our teams couldn't play here, is that, you know, as much as, like, the Raptors were frustrating, you know, the Jays just feel like an unknown entity to me because they're only now really appearing on the scene. And it's like, oh, we have a lot of catching up to do.
It's to add to that, we don't have that same sense of ownership,
right?
Because they were exiled for so very long. And even now you can only have like 15,000 or whatever. It's the same way with in radio. The reason people get attached to their favorite shows is they feel a sense of ownership because they feel they know the broadcaster. But if that same broadcaster never kind of lets you in behind the curtain or who he or she is as a, you know, when the show is off and who they are as a person, you know, if they just gave you the information, you would feel detached. You would feel no ownership. It's when you learn the nuggets of who this person really is. That's how you get hooked to a radio show. And it's kind of a similar thing with this baseball team.
I was thinking about the Raptors and how, because we knew who they were when they went into the bubble and then they didn't come back to Toronto because of the COVID year, we knew who the players were. We knew Fred. We knew Pascal and his problems. We knew OG and his ascent. And the fact is the trajectory was one from promise into disappointment. And that's, you know, even if they were in Toronto, we were going to forget about them. But the Jays have gotten really ripped off in a way, and that they pulled off this incredible story. Like, it's absolutely one of the most interesting stories in all of baseball this year. And if they actually pull off a decent playoff run or even make it, like, that'll be one of the sports stories of the year here in North America, just the way they've gone on fire. But they got really ripped off because they kind of went from a position like almost like a stalled car, you know, bullpen problems and, you know, and then over time they've just sort of really pulled it all together. But it has been so hard to get excited about it obviously we're all intellectually excited, but emotionally I just feel like there's still a disconnect between the average Toronto sports fan and just how amazing this is.
And I think that'll all change the moment. Like, I think what you're saying is true, and the remarkable thing is, considering how good they've been, there still is a bit of that disconnect. But I think the moment where they've clinched a playoff spot, I think that'll change. Jeff Passan from ESPN put out this tweet last night. The Jays 1-5 hitters are Springer, Simeon, Vlad, Bo, Teoscar. Their 7-9 hitters are 8-9 tonight. Their playoff rotation could be Ray, Berrios, Ryu, Manoah. They have gotten very, very scary. And that's the thing, is we can see this in a distance, like a storm coming. There is this beast that is ready to be unleashed. I think we just are waiting for them to clinch a playoff spot.
In some ways, I think you can blame Sportsnet for this. They've done a really piss poor job of getting people excited about it. And it speaks to kind of the limitations of broadcast television right now in order in terms of getting people excited. The Jays don't have much Twitter game.
Yeah.
As compared to, like, say, the Raptors or even the Leafs, for that matter. The young Leafs, I find, it's just there isn't a Twitter community around the Jays the same way there is around the Leafs or the Raptors, particularly the Raps. And that really hurts, too, I think, in terms of getting people really excited.
It would, you know, be what's needed? Bob, where's the, I don't know if this account exists. Is there a Blue Jays home run jacket Twitter account just through the perspective of the Blue Jays home run jacket?
I haven't seen it. And I've been looking around for, like, there have always, there have been people who have been around for a while, Drew Fairservice or Andrew Stoughton. You know, these are guys that we knew when we were doing radio together and we would put them on the show sometime. But it doesn't feel like there's been this underclass of Twitter, like, fascinating baseball presences. You know, I still keep thinking about, like, Hum and Chuck, you know, and Ghost Runner on First, you know, but, like, what's new? I mean, I could just be an old man and missing it, but I feel like I'm so much more in touch with what's happening on Raptors and Leafs Twitter than I am on Jay's Twitter. And I can't tell if this is a me thing or if this is it's just not as interesting thing.
I'm not sure. I can't answer that as well, but I certainly haven't seen this massive social media. What I haven't seen is a social media presence that reflects how good this team has been the last month.
And I'm not seeing the humor, you know, the Leafs, like the Twitter account where it's how many days it's been since, you know, we lost to a guy driving an AHL Zamboni driver. You know, like, I'm not, like, your point about the jacket's a great one. I feel like almost like that's more of a myth in baseball than it is in this town. I keep coming back to this point, and maybe I'm just talking about me and not everybody else, but I kind of go with what the conversations are that I have in the street. Mm-hmm. And in the last 10 days, no one has talked to me about the Jays.
That's weird.
That's
weird because they are the number one Toronto sports story, and it's not even close.
They've been the number one Toronto sports story since the Leafs lost, and probably in a way the best story since the Raptors won.
I was just going through my head thinking of, you're right, like just the local story. Like there's been the Olympic stuff and the women's soccer and the women's hockey and things like that. But no, and by the way, though, that first couple games back when they went 9-1, 9-2 in their first return to Skydome, I mean, especially the first game, that was really cool. But I can't wait if they do make the playoffs. I can't wait to see what it looks like eventually when they play a home game, because I know if you're a wild card, you know, you're on the road and all that kind of stuff. I really hope this continues so we get to have home playoff games in Toronto.
It's funny. You know how I know I'm starting to care? Hmm. Started getting worried about who we're going to resign.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I started looking at Marcus Simeon's numbers and thinking, God, what's he going to cost? And, you know, if we get Kevin Biggio out of there, like, you know, how much space are we going to clear up in the infield? And yeah. So that's a sign of care, is when you start to worry about the future.
By the way, the funny thing about that is you're 100% right. But for about a week and a half, where the Jays were scoring only 20 runs in six games against Detroit and Baltimore. Christ, they scored more than 20 in one game against Baltimore on Sunday. But that little doldrum time, that's when the Robbie Ray, Marcus Simeon conversation came up, because we all just got bummed out. Like, okay, well, looks like the season's over, so let's move on to the offseason talk.
As incredible as the 22-run game was, I think the comeback in the first half of the doubleheader against Baltimore, where they were down and then they wound up winning 11-10. I think that was the moment where I really realized this is happening. And then, of course, 22 runs, you know, it feels kind of like, it's weird how people get on rolls this way, you know, when teams get on rolls this way. But I don't know if there's another example of this in another sport. You know, it's not like you would watch the Raps and they would score 160 points four games in a row.
Yeah.
Like, no. This kind of gorge Mandarin table binging, does it happen in any other sport? I guess it happens in football, where you can get a team that gets super hot. And individual players can do this, but Yeah, maybe football is the only one where you start getting teams consistently putting up those crazy gaudy numbers. Because it's not like hockey where you would have a team scoring 9 goals 4 straight nights.
Yeah, no, that would never happen. And the examples of that, you know, like Russell Wilson through the first half of last year, where he was the number one guy for MVP, and then the offense went away. But it did go on, you know, a run. Same thing with Kyler Murray. Mahomes, that's just each and every week. For me, the moment with the Jays was, you know, it might have been that first game against Oakland where they came back to win 11-10. But mm-hmm. to your point about that Rays game, the important thing there, because they were down 10-7 in the seventh, and it was only a 7-inning game because it was a doubleheader, was that the Jays had lost the night before with right. Robbie Ray on the mound. That's after right. the great four games against the Yankees. So if they lose game two against Baltimore, now we're like, what the hell's going on? So yeah, that George Springer home run to end it, that was a hell of a moment.
It's such an important point, and that's really what hit me was the beginning of the slide felt like it could start. They were so hot, but it was such a hole to dig out of. You know, how long can you stay that hot for? Was it the Colorado Rockies who went 17 of 18 one year to make the wild card and get into the playoffs? I'm trying to think if it was
yes.
that Todd Helton team. It kind of starts to feel like that, where they're in such a crazy hole. It's almost like the Natural, where the New York Knights, led by Robert Redford, are going to make their charge to the playoffs.
And you can go and look at so many stats of what the Jays have done, and they've won like 14 of their last 15. And the great thing is with the numbers is it's not just been against Baltimore. Even if you get rid of that, they scored a lot against Oakland, scored a bunch against New York. Getting 8 against Tampa is remarkable. And the great thing about the Yankees series, two of those games were games where they were up, like, you know, up 2-0, up 3-0, and then the Yankees would tie it. But then the Jays would do the two things they were having trouble with earlier. The bullpen was able to hold, and they were able to manufacture runs late in games. When the Jays were scuffling, those were the two things they couldn't do. So it's like everything that they need to do, we've seen them do over these last 2.5 weeks.
It's unquestionable that the story is Vladdy just because of the magnitude of what he's doing. Anytime you have Triple Crown in the conversation, there can be no one else on the other on the team that you put above that. But the amazingness of Marcus Semien, I shake my head at this and think, what a signing. I have to tip my cap. They've done a lot of smart things along the way, but it's just, you've got to put Atkins on and just lift them above your shoulders. Do the fluff interview, Matt.
Oh, I would in a heartbeat, because they've earned the fluff interview. They've earned the ooey gooey easy interview. And that's why I was so disappointed right before that Oakland series. It's like, are we going to waste a year where you get Robbie Ray, who might win the Cy Young, and Marcus Semien, who's leading all of baseball in war? I think he still is. And you got both of them on these really cheap deals. And at the end, it won't mean a thing in terms of postseason.
Do you remember at the beginning of the year, I said I was going to watch one in every 5 games just when Ryu was pitching?
How's that going for you?
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's not even the most interesting pitcher on the staff, never mind the only reason to watch.
Oh, he's the fourth most important pitcher, which is a good sign. If Manoah can keep doing that, and Ray and Berrios has done really well, good for the Jays for making that deal. If Ryu's your number 4 guy, you're laughing.
When Robbie Ray was doing well at the beginning of the year, I said to myself, I will not get sucked in, because baseball does this, not just the Jays. Baseball does this all the time, where someone comes out and has a good couple starts and you start thinking, you know, case in point, I was walking down the street the other day and I saw someone wearing an Aaron Sanchez jersey. And I thought about how in his time, the mania around, is this guy going to become a Cy Young winner? And he didn't even become a pitcher. So baseball breaks your heart over and over and over again when it comes to talent. So I was like, no. I'm going to be a vet here. I'm going to play this cool. I think I played a little too cool and I missed it all. But I'm back in, Matt. I'm back in. Bandwagon Bob is back.
Hey, first off, welcome back. Listen, for everyone who jumped off, it made sense. They looked listless against some bad teams. They couldn't generate runs late. they were a front runner team where they had a horrible record when trailing after six or trailing after seven. They had a horrible record in one run games. So it sort of felt like, okay, it's a bit of a front runner team. Well, that narrative has now changed. When you have like a 4.6% chance of making the playoffs and Oakland, Seattle, Boston, and New York all had you for the wild cards, I get why people said, nope, this isn't going to happen. All it took was the Jays to go on an incredible, historic offensive run for everything to change and for the bullpen to be better and for the rotation to be one of the top three or four in the American League. So a lot had to happen. And guess what? Hooray. It all happened.
My final thought on this is you make a great point because I was thinking about the emotional disengagement that happened. And obviously a big part of it is COVID. Throwing out the suggestion, maybe it's because they don't have exciting Twitter, but maybe your point's a really good one. At least as important as the COVID part is they lost games that were hard to watch because they blew it at the end. They were pretty good to start the year. That was kind of exciting. And the bullpen was good. But then when they would be winning and then just blowing it right in the final stretch, baseball is too long to watch a whole game, to see someone blow it in the ninth, night after night.
Yeah.
And you're right. Now that I think about it, I was pretty jacked up about the year within reason, but that really took the wind out of my sails. Cause I thought, you know what? I'm a grown man. I got a family. I got basketball to worry about. Like, am I really going to watch 3 hours of a game just to have some clown with a handlebar mustache serve up a tomato?
Well, it's like you'd look at the roster, you'd look at the run differential, but then you would look at the win-loss record, and it's like, wait, you got all this, and this is happening, but you're barely over 500. And it just, it left you sort of confused and disappointed. You know, that's what happened in a couple of the negative spikes, so far this season.
It was the opposite of Babcock's first year in Toronto, where they lost a ton, but they were pretty good games. Like, they were competitive. They just weren't as good. That narrative was scrappy. And you go, oh, I'm enjoying watching this team play hard and smart. They're just not as talented as the other teams in their division. But this was, here we go.
That's first.
Yep. It took 24 minutes and 10 seconds to get there.
There you go.
So, yeah, point being, I'll be with them ride or die until the end of the season, whenever that comes now. And I kind of hope they can find the credit they deserve from me and from everybody else around, because it really is an amazing story.
Well, the good thing is the credit is there all over the place. Like, so much of the media, ESPN, a bunch of their writers and stuff, they'll say the second best team in the American League behind the Rays is the Jays. Now, I think, there still is Houston out there. But the point being, everyone, I think, really wants Toronto to make the playoffs in the baseball community because of all the young talent. Sort of in the same way everyone wishes the Angels would make the playoffs because they want to see Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. There is that feeling in the baseball community of let this team get in. Don't let it be Oakland.
Funny thing here is you and I are baseball fans. And I don't just mean Jays fans, but we were fans of the history of the game, still are, of other markets. Growing up, I grew up and I didn't have the Jays just yet for my first couple years as a sports fan, being like 6, 7 years old or whatever. And, you know, I was a Phillies fan under Tug McGraw because they won the World Championship. And I remember being excited about that. But there was no Toronto team to cheer for. So why wouldn't you? You know, listening to the radio. Mal Allen and This Week in Baseball. Da, 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 da. You know, the first grade highlight show of my life. Saturdays at 2:30. I wouldn't move. And I just needed to know what were the standings in the Rolaids Fireman of the Year Award. And so it feels right to be in love with the game because it's such a beautiful game. You know, it frustrates, but man, when it's good, is there anything better than a pennant race?
It's you're watching your team, then you see, oh, Boston lost to Seattle, or damn it, the Yankees, they came back and beat the Twins. And, you know, there's just so much there, once again, on the theme of all-you-can-eat buffets to gorge on. You mentioned family. Real quick, just going off sports, how has it been the first week or so with Charlotte back at school? Has it been okay?
What's your experience? She's happy to be back. She had to miss yesterday because she woke up and she was feeling under the weather. And in any normal year, we would send her in. But if we send her in and she gets sent back home, all of a sudden it turns into like a thing.
Right.
So I think there's going to be a lot of parents who do this. They look at their kid and say, do I want to go get my kid a COVID test just because they had a bad night's sleep? And the answer is no. Yeah. So you hold them back for a day so you don't wind up having to run around. But, you know, that's besides that, I think it's actually our school's been well organized. You know, I want to take all the politics out of it and just simply say, I think it's really great the kids are back. And
agreed.
And just the chance to be kids again. It's too bad that there's no sports or clubs right now after school, particularly sports. I worry about the fitness levels of all these kids. They've missed two really good years of running in the playground, if nothing else, or the schoolyards. But, you know, it's okay, dude. It's okay. I think it could be a weird winter, but we'll see.
Weird, that word weird, it has a lot of meaning. You know, the one thing that's, I do wonder about the consequences of no team sports. Like, we've now seen Andre DeGrasse, the Canadian women's soccer and hockey team, Leila Annie Fernandez, a lot of great tennis players. And I wonder if the next one of those, or Jamal Murray, we can go on and on. I wonder if there's an 11-year-old version of them right now, but without team sports to go to, do they go into a different path? And maybe that other path is still wonderful and fulfilling and they have a full life. But I wonder if, because of COVID and lack of sports, I wonder if we're going to miss out on some gold medalists or someone who scores 23 points per game.
Can I have a cynical take here, Matt?
Do it.
Most of the kids who were going to make the pros have found a way to stay busy anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the parents are doing things like renting sheets of ice for them and their friends to go skate around. And, you know, I think the high performance kids haven't slowed one bit. I can think of a bunch of kids, not just a few, like a bunch, that have found ways to keep some of them below the table, to keep getting coached, to keep getting reps. I think, you know, it's possible their progress might be stunted, but compared to everybody else, I actually think there's going to be a huger divide between the really good kids and the sort of good ones. Where we're going to miss out, I think, is those kids that don't come from rich families or don't have families that are dedicated to their success, that might have developed at their own pace. I think they'll be pretty far behind because everybody else kept going.
Right. Yep. No, that makes sense.
It's a reflection of society in a lot of ways about how COVID didn't shut the economy down. It just shut the economy down for people who didn't already have money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just because I was thinking about Andre DeGrasse and, you know, just a semi-local guy. And, you know, you wonder if he had 2 years where there wasn't formal official competitions going on, would he have gone down the same path?
I think he was a late starter anyway, but your point's a really good one. I would say, you know, whether it's the Fernandezes or the women's soccer team, most of those kids haven't missed a beat. In the same way, like, they talk about the learning gap that's going to happen now, but that's mostly just for the kids who didn't have parents who were paying for them to be coached up that whole time.
Right.
Everybody's been getting coached up. It's kind of like, we could talk about this forever. I've learned so much about how privatized all forms of education have become, whether it's sports education or, you know, school, whatever. It's getting tougher and tougher to not be rich, buddy.
Yeah, that's
it. Time to get to Jeff Pollock, isn't it?
What's that? Oh,
that's a good time. Of course. I got so many NFL questions. I figure we better dive in, but should probably do Jeff, since we're veering towards politics a little bit. That feels like Jeff's entrance music.
Yeah, absolutely. This division between rich and poor. Shame on you, Justin Trudeau, for always widening it. Anyway, our sponsor is Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com. Fantastic lawyer, really nice man, small family law firm. If you need legal help, at some point you will, call him up, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Again, the website is jeffpollock.com. That is Jeff with a G, as in, gee, I really wish I knew a good lawyer. Now you do.
I like talking to the parents who support the conservatives, like around the school. Yeah. Because they'll be like, oh, I'm so mad at Trudeau. I hope he gets his. And I'm like, yeah, he didn't really do a good job. And they think I'm agreeing with them. And then they find out I'm an NDP supporter. It's like, oh.
Oh.
It's like I have food on my face.
Is it awkward?
Like, no, not for me. I think it's funny. But they just assume it must be one or the other.
Right.
Well, if you don't like Trudeau, you must be on the blue side. Yeah, not exactly.
Yeah, I'm an orange.
Okay.
So, okay. NFL.
NFL. I don't want to get in the way of your hot takes. So why don't we do this? We're going to play Pepper. I'm going to toss you the ball and you just bat it back. Okay.
Done.
NFL Pepper. Here we go. Have the Colts become, I'm not going to start there. I'll come back to that. What do you think is the more meaningful storyline for the year? Is it Green Bay shitting the bed or the Chiefs finding a way to win against a really good team at home?
It's the football side is, man, we could go hours on just what Patrick Mahomes is doing, but we got to go soap opera. You had an entire offseason where Aaron Rodgers was constantly leaking these stories about his discontentment at just the right time. And then the season starts and he's horrible. Now, it's not just on him. Two rookie starters on the offensive line. Their all-pro left tackle is out. They couldn't run the ball. So just getting the football side out of the way. But his two interceptions were lousy. And the body language stunk. And you're playing against the Saints team that had 10 new starters because of injuries. They had a starting quarter that was suspended. Their practice and games all been relocated because of Hurricane Ida. And they kicked the shit out of them. One quarterback had 5 touchdowns and no interceptions. The other had no touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And it was Jameis Winston having the efficient game and Aaron Rodgers looking bad. Suddenly, Bob, a Monday nighter between Green Bay and Detroit is actually kind of interesting. It'll probably end up being a blowout. But yeah, it has to be the Aaron Rodgers story.
So to what extent is it the Aaron Rodgers story and to what extent is it the Green Bay story? I can't figure this out because he was bad.
Yeah.
But you know, everybody's allowed to have an off game, but the defense looked terrible. I mean, Jameis Winston scored 5 touchdowns, but that's not Aaron Rodgers' fault. The line isn't great. Like, there were people who thought the Packers could win the Super Bowl this year. Certainly be in that conversation. And I don't know if I remember a team that was thought of that highly, looking this bad, with this much drama, this early. So to what extent is this a Rodgers thing, and to what extent is it just that Packers team, which has been on a roll now for, I can't remember it not being on a roll, is it finally running out of steam?
The correct answer is probably it's an offensive line thing. The Saints could be a good team, but all that adversity, you know, it didn't make it seem like it's just not a very good team. And you didn't just win close. You blew them out. I don't know what that game was so bad. I don't know what to make of it. Maybe it's probably just a one game blip 2 weeks from now. We're like, Aaron Rodgers was right. But it was so bad. Plus that offseason, I can't help but wonder, I'm not saying obviously it's not like Aaron Rodgers tanked or anything like that. It looked like he did, but clearly didn't do that. But it was so bad. You just have to wonder, is everything okay with Rodgers?
I watched the fourth quarter of the Chiefs and the Browns as I'm flipping around just because it looked like the Browns were going to do it. And it was really exciting. And we can talk about that because what the Chiefs accomplished was pretty breathtaking. And with that amazing sense of inevitability that great teams bring to those situations. But in the end, I think you're right. The bigger story for the year, unless it goes away really fast, will be the discontent of Rodgers and not the miraculous play of Mahomes. Which is a bit of a shame, but it's also the way we relate to sports. We like the drama at least as much, if not more, than the actual play itself. So here's my question about Aaron Rodgers. What can he actually do if the team isn't good to rehabilitate this? Because with this one game, it feels like it's fallen on his shoulders if the Packers don't make the playoffs. But is it reasonable to think that one guy, even a great quarterback like that, could fix this situation?
He can fix a lot. What I wonder about is you basically had 6 months where the messaging was, I don't want to be here anymore. And I'm sure the players understand that's him against management. But if you're a player and you're hearing over and over again, your quarterback doesn't want to be there, and then your quarterback stinks up in week one, like that can have a negative osmosis effect that can really seep in. Like the players, you know, the only thing I can think that Rodgers can do beyond just play better and you know, the offensive line, the work that they've got to do. But the message Rodgers has to have is that, guys, I'm in this. I am 100% committed. This is not Kevin Durant in his last year with Golden State. You know, it's got to be, I'm not thinking about what's going on next. And then there's like an NFL, there's a report, I forget from whom, that Denver is looking to trade for Aaron Rodgers at the end of this year. It's kind of hard as a player if your leader, if you feel your leader doesn't want to be there.
It's funny you say Denver, because I was thinking during that debacle how if I'm in Denver and my phone rings and it's Green Bay, I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll listen. But here, jot this down and sharpen your pencil. I've got a few things I want to discuss. Or as soon as Miami, like Miami must be slapping its head and thinking, man, we got to go with Tua. We could have had Aaron Rodgers. Now we're both unhappy. You know what occurred to me, actually? It was funny that as much as I've disliked Novak Djokovic, losing at the U.S. Open kind of humanized him, and the way he responded kind of humanized him. And it felt like the villainy of Novak Djokovic could be on the wane. And it occurred to me that Aaron Rodgers is the Djokovic of the NFL, where you cannot question the greatness. He is absolutely amongst the greatest who have ever done this, ever. But there's something so prickish about the guy that you just can't root for him. He's Novak Djokovic.
Yeah. There's always the story of the teammates that didn't like him. And then there's the what's going on with the family drama. And I'm not even blaming Rodgers. It's just there's always something. And, you know, and the weird thing is we all side with him over management. But then with each and every story that is leaked and released, it's like, okay, we get it. You're not happy. But your team also has Devonta Adams and Aaron Jones. And when healthy, you've got an all-pro left tackle. And, you know, like every year, there is talent on this team. At some point, it's like, okay, we get it. You're unhappy. Now go play football. Most of us are unhappy with our jobs as well.
Like Chris Rock said about the Hulk, you know, the first couple of times Bruce Banner hulks up because somebody made him angry, you know, you feel bad for him. He's getting picked on. But after five or six times, it's like, you know, Bruce, maybe the problem's you. You seem to be angry an awful lot.
Yeah, you're the common denominator here. If you go into seven bars and you always end up in a fight, maybe it's not the local townies.
You've moved to seven towns, Bruce, yeah. And you've gotten into a fight in all of them.
Yeah. Look in the mirror, buddy. By the way, yeah. Totally off topic.
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite Adam Carolla bits was when he was breaking down the movie Con Air, and the scene that made the least sense was not a plane landing in the Vegas Strip and, you know, landing. It was the opening scene when two guys in a bar decide they're going to pick a fight with a big, giant, you know, Marine Navy guy in Nick Cage. Like, that would never happen where two guys are like, oh, let's pick a fight with that guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know you say that, Matt, because as a veteran of zero fights in your life, I'm always amazed that you've gotten into no fights. I don't know if that's good or sad, but...
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. I think we can move right past the Chiefs just because what they did was very Chiefy, and they're the best team in the league. And I think what was more interesting was Nick Chubb fumbling and Baker Mayfield not being able to deliver right at the end of the game. If I'm a Browns fan, I'm excited that my team is so good that I can be in these conversations. I'm also a little nervous because my best players didn't deliver when there was a chance to really land the knockout blow. So
for me, There are two quick takeaways. One, I still don't trust Baker Mayfield, even right. though he looked really good. And maybe, you know, if Beckham comes back, it's a different story. But the other one with Kansas City, just real quick, there was six teams last year that had a better a point differential. They were 8-0 in one score games. Like, they were riding a fine line and they won the ball. They went 14-2, but Kansas City still looked a lot like last year's team, which is not a bad thing, but the defense isn't that great. The running game doesn't do very much. Like, if we could talk about one player Patrick Mahomes is so much better than everyone else. They're down 29-20. He uncorks that 75-yard cross-the-field pass to Tyreek Hill. Mahomes is doing it with not a lot of help on defense and running. Like, they got Kelsey, they got Hill, but holy Lord, like, there's, like, between him and Brady, you feel so confident when you have one of those two guys on your team.
So you said 8-0 in one-score games. It's funny because you can read that as either a really good stat or a really bad stat. I feel like you kind of lean towards the bad, because why does an offense that powerful, why are they playing in so many one-score games? Mm-hmm. Or you can say when it's close, they find ways to win. And I actually think, depending on the situation, like, that's one of those, you know, is it the glass half full or half empty? Yeah. I'm assuming you think that that's half empty, though.
Well, it's just, you know, it's not usually that sustainable. And right. And again, this is me trying to be critical of a team that went 14-2, went to the Super Bowl, and maybe if their offensive line was healthy, it would have been different. It's just, I guess the point is, the team looks just like they did last year. And maybe that's not going to be an issue at all. But they are a very top-heavy team, kind of like the Leafs. Like, if either Kelsey or Tyreek Hill gets hurt, that's a bad Jenga block to lose.
All right, let's move over to Buffalo, who lose to Pittsburgh.
Ugh.
And it was a really boring, kind of weird game. It was almost like a boxing match that goes the distance and nobody really throws a lot of punches. It's just a lot of clutching.
Yeah.
What's your take on the Buffalo offense?
That the Pittsburgh, maybe it's just the Pittsburgh defense is that good. They didn't blitz. They got pressure on Josh Allen using just four players. Just incredible, incredible. But the offense, you know, they failed on those fourth down conversions. They looked out of sync. 51 pass attempts. Like, Buffalo's offense didn't look like it was being run by such a good and stable coaching staff. It was weird.
It was really weird. And quarterback draws that were working last year, it was like Tomlin was ready for them. And so Josh Allen couldn't really get going there. The fourth down calls were bizarre. You know, the first half, Buffalo was the better team. And the second half, it's just like they just never got going. And moments where it could pick up some momentum just didn't. I think if you're a Buffalo fan, which I am, the concern is obviously the line. Because to your point, if you're rushing four and you can pressure a guy as much as Allen was pressured, like, that doesn't bode well for when you're playing really, really good teams. But I'm ready to give this another couple weeks, because it just kind of felt like a game where it didn't click. And because there was so much excitement preseason around this team and what they were going to accomplish, it feels like an enormous letdown. But I think we need a couple weeks. I think Josh Allen really is that good. I think they do have weapons around him. I did like the way the secondary played. So I'm not prepared to say this is like a disappointing loss.
Yeah.
It's a curious loss.
And what it might be, by the end of the year, Pittsburgh could have the best defense in the NFL. And then that'll put different context on it. It's just the fact, like, they lose two balls on, they lose possession twice on downs on some bad plays. They lose a fumble, eight penalties, the blocked punt. The fact that Josh Allen threw the ball 51 times and there was only 16 rush attempts from, you know, from the running backs. It just,
and I'm glad you mentioned that, because the inability to run actually concerns me a little bit too. You'd like to see a bit more balance. And, you know, Devin Singletary is probably not that guy. So we'll see how that plays out. I guess, you know, because Allen can run so well, he has to be considered part of the attack. But even still, there was a lot of passing. You know, Mike Tomlin's an interesting character, though, right? Because if you listen to Pittsburgh fans, I'm not going to say much maligned, but I think he's been there so long, there's frustration. You know, kind of like Eagles fans had with Andy Reid, but for different reasons. Just like when you get really used to a guy and you haven't won at all, you start to get mad. But it really felt like Mike Tomlin speed bagged the Buffalo coaching staff.
Absolutely. 100%. Never had a losing record. Pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they had a great game plan. They stuck with it. Roethlisberger, I don't know. I mean, there's all these weapons there. And the problem with, well, the problem with Pittsburgh, they just can't block. Horrible offensive line. But yes, to your point, Sean McDermott, Brian Daboll, they got out coached by Mike Tomlin.
All right, let's start speed bagging here. We're going, we're playing pepper here. We're playing pepper. All right, I'm tossing to you and you're knocking it back. Trevor Lawrence, 3 interceptions, 3 touchdowns, threw for like 350 yards, made some really horrible decisions too. Your take on Trevor Lawrence's debut?
Receivers dropped 6 passes. But he was staring down receivers, some erratic throws, but also not a great start for Urban Meyer. Too many men in the huddle. They're lining up incorrectly 2.5, burning 2 timeouts in the first quarter to avoid delay penalties. And for Trevor Lawrence, I thought he played fairly well considering everything going on around him. But the shameful part, the Houston Texans, 3 picks on Sunday. They had 3 picks total last year. So a bad start for Lawrence.
Yeah, they played a terrible team and made them look really good. Zach Wilson with the Jets.
6 sacks, 14 pressures. I worry for him. Like, we all screamed that Justin Fields needs to start, but damn, when your team can't pass block and you've just lost your left tackle who could be out, I think, for at least 1.5 months, and also Zach Wilson looks like he's 9. Like, he looks like he is 9 years. He looks like Zach Wilson's son.
You know who he kind of reminds me of a bit? Reminds me a bit of Nylander.
Yes.
He just has that you're too young to be a professional athlete look.
Yeah.
Mac Jones.
Mac Jones looked good. Like, he ran the offense really, really efficiently in his, for his first start. Like, if you go back and you look at the numbers, it's weird. New England dominated in so many facets of that game. First downs, yardage. They were 11 for 16 on third down. They ran the ball better. They held onto the ball for nearly 37 minutes. The problem was 1 for 4 in the red zone, penalties, and they lost the turnover battle. But overall, Mac Jones, he had a good game, like, especially what they were able to do on third down.
I've seen a lot of people say that Saquon Barkley, running back for your New York Football Giants, could be the comeback player of the year after one game. Matt, how are you feeling about that?
Before the game, I put down $100 on Denver to win. I've never felt so good about a bet in my life. They are such dog shit. Like, why? They never should have drafted Saquon Barkley number 2 overall. They chose the wrong quarterback in Daniel Jones. They selected the wrong offensive lineman in Andrew Thomas. 3 high first-round picks, and it's looking like whiff, whiff, whiff. And it's not that Barkley isn't good. He's very talented. But even when Saquon Barkley had his like 11, 1200 yard, whatever it was, season as a rookie, the Giants still ranked in the mid 20s in terms of rushing attack. He is Sharif Abdul-Rahim, baby. It is all empty calorie production.
Oh, that is such a great pull. Cross sport. Very nicely done, Matthew.
Thank you.
The Indianapolis Colts with Carson Wentz. Are they now the NFL's operating definition of meh?
Yes, 100%. They are meh. And the weird thing about that team, the first half defensively, they looked horrible. It was just bomb after bomb from Russell Wilson. In the second half, they basically defensively controlled that game. But, you know, not great receivers. Offensive line didn't really do the job. And Carson Wentz was checking down to running backs over and over again. Yes, Indianapolis, they've got talent. They also have a lot of star players that are meh to getting a vaccination.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. It felt like in the play on the preseason, we were going to hear a lot more about vaccinations. And then, of course, the excitement of week 1 comes in and you're not thinking about it. But you feel like it'll come back around, because I do. Like, by about week 3 or 4, there'll be another angry locker room blow up over vaccinations.
Oh, yeah. What'll happen, like, if a Carson Wentz, a Kirk Cousins, a DeAndre Hopkins, if they've got to miss a couple games, there's going to be a lot of players on the team going, wait a minute, isn't it about doing whatever it takes to win? 100%. Yeah. At some point, it's going
to
happen.
Sorry, but do you find it hard to commit to a team like the Ravens because of the Lamar Jackson, I'm not going to get vaccinated kind of vibe?
I'll be honest, when the game starts, I'm not thinking about it.
Yeah, not in terms emotionally. I mean, like, if you were a betting man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I saw, like, some of those guys drop in our fantasy draft. just because of COVID. Like, it's something that you got to keep an eye on.
What did you think of the Mannings? Monday Night Football.
We need more of that. They were great. Peyton Manning is like, we always knew he's a star, but for him to be able to carry it, because like Eli Manning's funny, but Eli Manning's not always the best, you know, straight man to have.
I'm your straight man. So are you the Peyton? I'm the Eli.
No, you're way better than Eli. I love it.
Words before, and I don't think I will again.
Say that again.
I've never heard you utter those words, and I don't think I will again. No, you're way better than Eli.
I will always protect my precious, precious Eli. It got me wondering, who would be, and it's harder, the hockey, like, who would you like to see doing that for a hockey game?
Yeah. O-Dog?
Listen, yeah, O-Dog. I want P.K. Subban to retire because I think he'd be great at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make me wonder who I would like to see on the hockey version of that.
Yeah, I honestly...
Ed Belfour.
But he's sullen. He's sullen. He always looks like he's just been like sipping on vinegar, like those 19th century goths.
Yeah.
You know, how sallow can I get my skin because I am so sad? I don't know. Hockey's just not that kind of sport. You know, basketball, there's too many guys and they wind up becoming almost buffoonish because they have to outdo each other. And hockey, there's nobody. Maybe football's going to be the sweet spot here. I mean, the Mannings, look, you know that I'm extremely interested in this experiment because of the multiverse of broadcasters concept. Yep. And it feels like it's just the beginning. Oh, I got a lot of texts here.
I didn't notice.
Yeah. The team has been sharing different mushroom recipes.
I think I've asked this before. With the people you work with on with Strombo and Apple, mm-hmm. how many of them could you have a conversation about Patrick Mahomes with?
Well, actually, one of the producers used to produce Rodney Harrison's show.
Oh, okay.
And he used to be a pro wrestler, too. He held some kind of belt in the NWA at one point. Dude named Blaine. Really interesting guy. He's done a million different things. He's like the Forrest Gump of Apple Radio. He's been everywhere. He's... Hank Snowman, I've been everywhere, man. Final thought on the NFL in week one. Other than stuff that we've discussed, what is your overall takeaway? Because I have a particular one, but I want to hear yours first.
All right. One final thought is, remember decades ago or years ago, we wondered if there was an openly gay player, mm-hmm. would it be a distraction? Well, in last night's Monday nighter, one of the key defensive plays in overtime, Carl Nassib sack, force the fumble on Lamar Jackson in overtime. Raiders go on to win. And for a brief second, it was like, oh, yes, that's the gentleman who put out the video to announce to the world he was coming out as homosexual. And then a second later, we all just moved on. And we then focused on all the other football stuff. And it's like, yeah, and it's not 100%, obviously, but I think the majority of fans and media and everyone is like, yeah, okay, there it is. But I want to talk about what Derek Carr did in the fourth quarter.
I hope you are right. I think you are probably partially right. I'm always a little bit suspicious of what people don't say versus you. I think you're more of an optimist when it comes to human nature than I am. But I think that is a nice one. Mine is a much more, you know, less socially conscientious take than yours, which was just how great it was to have football back and how funny it is that it was only a couple years ago when people like under Trump are like, oh, you know, football's going to go away and it's a dying entity. And, you know, yesterday felt like felt like an outrageously fun way to spend a Sunday. And it was nice out and the Bills are back. And even though it was kind of a boring game, it was just great to be able to flip around. And what really hit me was, as much as anything, how comfortable it felt watching a Sunday worth of football.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And I'm sorry, Matt, to interrupt. Yeah. But I stress that word is comfort. Like, there was just something, you know, like after all that, COVID's not over, obviously, but, you know, like this idea that we're going to try to get this thing rolling forward again and we're going to try to keep things as normal as possible. And, you know, I've been skeptical of normal, you know, on a variety of levels. And I think I still am to a certain degree, but at the same time, it really was just nice to do something that I remembered as being fun. Watching football, And, you know, I was really grateful for it in a weird way. Like, what I wanted to sort of ultimately express was I was grateful for having something so enjoyable not be complicated.
Something enjoyable. Clearly, you were not watching the Denver Giants game.
That feels like a swish to end the game.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.